ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Peter Martin, host of The Economy Stupid, where we find economics in relationships.
She only wants a man if he's really, really good.
In the Reserve Bank board.
I knew. Everybody on the board knew recession was coming.
And in food.
It's about the cup of diesels required through the life cycle to get that chicken patty on your burger.
The Economy Stupid. Search for The Economy Stupid on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
XAI's Elon Musk and OpenAI's Sam Altman were once on the same team. They were united by the belief that artificial intelligence was too important to be left to profit motives. Then OpenAI became worth, $852 billion, and Musk got some feelings about it. Those feelings are now being aired in a federal courtroom in California in a case which absolutely promises to deliver the juiciest tech circus of the year. Because when you promise to build AI for the benefit of all humanity and end up building one of the most valuable companies on Earth instead, have you broken that promise? And is this a genuine ideological crusade or just the world's most expensive sour grapes? My name is Ray Johnston and welcome to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Now joining me to unpack some of the biggest stories in tech right now and why they matter for the rest of us, we have Alice Clark, who is a freelance technology and games journalist and writer of Press Any Button on Substack. Welcome back, Alice.
Thanks so much for having me.
And David Browey, technology journalist at Information Age, amongst other things. Welcome back, David.
Thanks, Ray. Great to be here.
Now, you know that feeling when the worst person you know makes a half-decent point, but you don't quite know what their motivations are? That's how I'm feeling about Elon Musk suing OpenAI and its CEO, Sam Altman. He's claiming that the company that he helped found was hijacked and turned into a for-profit machine that betrayed its original charitable mission. So, David, could you start by giving us a little bit of history around this beef? What is the relationship between Elon and Sam?
Sure. Well, there certainly is a fair bit of history here. Elon, of course, as many people would be aware, has had his fingers in quite a number of pies over the years. One of them was around sort of 2015 timeframe. He and a bunch of other tech-loving people decided that it would be great to set up an AI company. Although it was still something that was evolving, nothing like what we know now. He got involved with a couple other people and put in some money, and they basically set up OpenAI, which of course is the company that went on to change the world in 2022 by releasing ChatGPT. Elon, over the course of the few years, it depends on whose account you listen to, but basically became very, very positive about the company, and then less so when he realized they weren't going to make him CEO. After a few years, he basically left and withdrew his interest in OpenAI and decided that he would dabble in a few other hobbies like SpaceX and Tesla and the other companies that he runs. Basically, he got out, unfortunately, a little bit before OpenAI really went ballistic. So there's quite a lot of history there. CEO Sam Altman, who's running OpenAI now, has become kind of an adversary. It's sort of the spy versus spy of the tech industry. And so he and Elon are constantly battling about the philosophical underpinnings of the company. Initially, it was intended to be set up as sort of a non-profit, save the world, aren't we great kind of thing. And then when ChatGPT took off, Sam Altman has realized that, wow, there's trillions to be made here. And I don't know if Elon is annoyed philosophically that they've left their philosophical mission, or he's just annoyed that he sold out at the wrong time. But either way, there's quite a lot of back and forth between Elon and the company that he sort of started to help co-found.
Mm. And Alice, what is the actual claim that Elon Musk is making here? What is his claim against OpenAI and Sam Altman that has gotten to the courts somehow?
So his claim is like he's suing them for allegedly looting a charity and potentially destroying the foundation of charitable giving.
That's pretty serious claim.
It is. It's also a pretty interesting claim coming from the world's richest person who declined to end world hunger when offered the opportunity, noted Trump supporter, and guy who, like a little more than a year ago, used his Doge group to gut USAID, a move which the University of Minnesota estimates to have led to the deaths of more than 781,000 people, including roughly 500,000 children in the first year. So I'm not sure how into charity Musk actually is and how much he cares about the foundation of charitable giving. But yeah, that's what he says he's caring about here.
So why do you think he's doing it? I can tell that you don't really believe that this is his ultimate goal here. Why is he taking this to court?
Okay, if I were a cynical person.
Yes, I believe that you may be, Alice. I'm so sorry.
Well, I've never heard this before. So Musk is the man who sued for the right to call himself a founder of Tesla from the actual founders. I'm guessing he kind of wants credit for OpenAI's success, but also wants to leave the door open to say he tried to prevent all the problems if the bubble bursts and the company goes down. I think he wants to have his $150 billion and eat it too.
It's also worth mentioning that Elon Musk now runs his own AI company, which he established after ChatGPT became famous. So there's got to be a little bit of self-interest there as well. XAI is not ChatGPT, and the Grok chatbot, while it has its uses, has not become anywhere near as popular. So I think there's just a fair bit of billionaire envy going on here.
Yes, and part of the suit is Musk is claiming he really deeply cares about AI safety, and that's really at the heart of the suit as well. And given he runs Grok, which is most famous for, you know, making non-consensual naked images of literal children, I am also cynical about how much he actually cares about AI safety.
Grok taught me to swear in Greek. We'll come back to that later.
Actually teach you to swear in Greek, or just make up some new words that said were swear words?
Yes, it did. No, it actually did. And that's probably the level of social responsibility that people associate with Elon Musk, as well as what you said about the images that were being generated. So a lot of this, I think, we are probably forgiven to be a little bit skeptical about.
Now, what about the other side of this? What is OpenAI's response to being sued by Elon for these reasons?
Concisely, I think their response is, what the hell, dude? But in a longer way, they are refuting it. They're saying that the not-for-profit arm is still managing the whole company, and that the only reason why they went for-profit was so that they were better able to compete in getting compute and also stealing some of Google's best engineers. One could also argue that all of OpenAI is still not-for-profit, given it's actively losing money and recently missed several key internal targets. So, you know, either way, you're doing good.
I do recall the initial investment from Elon into OpenAI. He promised them $100 million, and I believe it was only about $30 million of that, which is still a decent amount of money that he actually put into the company before bailing because they wouldn't make him CEO.
According to a post on OpenAI's website from 2024, they wanted to say, like, make the initial raise $100 million. And Elon Musk is like, no, make it $1 billion. And whatever shortfall there is, I'll make up for it. And then he absolutely did not do that.
Oh, gosh.
At all. But, you know, it's kind of on brand for him if you look at all the claims he's been making about Tesla and X and XAI and colonizing Mars. So, you know. At least he's consistent.
He's consistent with overpromising and maybe never delivering. Now, David, I noticed that Microsoft is also named as a defendant here. I'm assuming that has to do with the relationship between OpenAI and Microsoft. Have they come out and said anything about this?
Well, they're denying, of course, any involvement in the early days of OpenAI. They came on as investors a few years down the track, and basically after Musk had already left, Microsoft stepped in, and they have been big supporters of the company, of OpenAI, for a number of years, and they really jumped in when ChatGPT came out. They were really early to move in terms of financial backing and involvement in the success of OpenAI. That has been a good partnership and productive for OpenAI. And it seems unsurprising, I suppose, that that Elon is going to name Microsoft just in an attempt to try to hold them back a little bit and get them to have some skin in this game. But the response from Microsoft has generally been that, you know, we weren't there at this time and we have nothing to do with this.
Imagining Musk wins this case, what happens?
From what I can understand, and I will fully openly admit that my understanding of legal matters is minimal, but I've read a lot of articles about this now. He wants to take roughly $150 million from OpenAI's for-profit arm and put it in their not-for-profit arm, and then he wants to take over OpenAI and get rid of the two guys currently in charge of OpenAI, and then presumably make himself CEO, thus adding to his collection of companies that don't make a lot of profit but do make a lot of big claims.
Is this likely to happen, David? Do we think that that would be the end result of this case?
Well, the challenge here is, I guess he's got to prove that this philosophical movement of the company that he's alleging is actually that important to merit $150 billion judgment, it's theoretically possible, but these people think in terms of billions where the rest of us think in terms of thousands, I suppose. It's easy for him to throw big numbers around, but it does seem a bit unlikely that financially that sort of thing could happen. Again, I'm not a legal expert either, but that seems like a lot. Let's just put it that way. It can't be a coincidence that OpenAI is actually in the process of planning an IPO, which is expected to be one of the largest in history. I think they're saying the company's expecting to raise over $1 trillion from the markets. And so Elon, probably as someone who is competing with OpenAI, would love to do anything to stop that from happening. Because once OpenAI gets access to that capital, it's just going to expand its business even more. And all of these AI companies are investing squillions into the infrastructure to run AI, the data centers, they're buying the chips. This market has absolutely taken off. And I think Elon probably would like to kneecap OpenAI even just a bit, just to get some time to catch up and probably further his own interests. Whether he actually follows through and sets up the charitable arm and, tries to do nice things with AI as opposed to letting it run its course, which seems to be the way now, I'm a little skeptical.
You are listening to Download the Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by David Browey, who is a technology journalist at Information Age, and also Alice Clark, who is a freelance technology and games journalist and the writer of Press Any Button on Substack. And after 38 years at Microsoft, 12 years running Xbox, Phil Spencer's retired, and the company has handed over the keys and maybe Phil's wardrobe of leather jackets too, that's to be confirmed, to Asha Sharma. So, Alice, who is this new CEO?
That's a great question. She's kind of come out of nowhere a little bit in terms of gaming. She was previously VP in Microsoft's AI division, and she's now making some supposedly really big changes at Xbox and changing the direction.
What changes are we talking about here?
Well, she's renamed the division from Microsoft Gaming to Xbox, which is pretty huge.
Now, so you mean it was Xbox, then Microsoft Gaming, now it's back to Xbox again?
Yes. So it changed to Microsoft Gaming because it started to include things from the Activision purchase, amongst other reasons. So World of Warcraft and Candy Crush, which are obviously not Xbox games, they are now Xbox games.
Okay.
So it's a win for someone, probably. She's also reduced the cost of Game Pass. Last year, Game Pass, Xbox's subscription service, went up by about 50%, which everyone hated a lot. And she's now cut the price back a little bit and also announced that Call of Duty will not be on Game Pass day one anymore, which was then disliked.
Yeah, so Call of Duty being an Activision game and Activision being the developer that Microsoft had purchased for a huge amount of money, it all seems very convoluted. What's going on with that, David?
Let's say I think it's a repositioning by Microsoft. Initially when Microsoft got into gaming, you have to go back 25 years. They thought, let's do the Xbox. It's an area we're not big in, but people seem to like video games. At that point, a game was something that you plugged into your TV. They've really expanded over the years, as Alice was saying. With the the purchase of Activision, they got Call of Duty, Candy Crush, things that people were already playing. And so Microsoft has kind of ridden the success of that that technology. But you know, the world has moved on. People are gaming online now. People game on their phones, on their tablets, whatever it is. And the expectations are a bit different now than they were at that time ago. So Microsoft, I think, is definitely trying to stay ahead of that. And of course, AI is one of the very transformative forces in gaming as well. Asha has come from a background in AI and Microsoft's AI plans. So I think she's well qualified to change things a bit in terms of what gaming actually involves. And it seems like an opportunity for the company to really pivot into how the world is now versus how it was 25 years ago when we were still renting movies on Blu-ray and popping the discs in to play some games, you know?
Hmm. The Xbox did try to pivot to the new way of things a little bit last year, but they did it in an absolutely baffling "This is an Xbox" campaign, where they're like, they'd show a phone and this is an Xbox. And the message was essentially, don't buy our products, just use whatever, because who even cares anymore? Just please subscribe to Game Pass. Which surprisingly was not a very effective marketing message.
Yeah, I can imagine that would just confuse a lot of people, being like, what do you mean my phone is an Xbox? Because you still needed the Xbox to run the games, right?
Not necessarily, because you could do Xbox cloud gaming. So you could just use, like, and you still can, your like Samsung or LG TV or your phone with the app, and you don't even need to own an Xbox. You just have to have a Game Pass subscription. Unfortunately, Game Pass doesn't make as much money as selling consoles and physical and digital games does, because Xbox gets a cut of all the digital games sold on the Xbox store, and that's where the real profit is. What really annoyed me about this transition is, yes, Phil Spencer had been there for a long time. It was time for him to enjoy his many, many dollars in retirement. But they threw Sarah Bond under the bus.
Now, for those who don't know, who is Sarah Bond?
Sarah Bond was the second in charge at Xbox for many years, and she was blamed for the This Is an Xbox campaign. But what made her so interesting, and I think such an important figure in Xbox, was that she was also the face of the Gaming for Everyone initiative, which was Xbox's initiative to champion diversity and accessibility in games by making the groundbreaking blind accessibility features in Forza Motorsport, or championing games with diverse characters like Tell Me Why, which was the first major game to feature a transgender protagonist. I haven't heard any mention of Gaming to Everybody in some time. Mm. And since Forza Motorsport, I can't remember Xbox really talking about a major accessibility feature. And I'm concerned that with the canny of Sarah Bond, they've also canned somewhat of that initiative.
And there
I'm really hoping
been,
Asha Sharma brings it back.
Yeah, because there has been a pattern across a lot of tech companies, particularly those who require relationships with the Trump administration, to either publicly or very quietly dismantle their diversity and inclusion initiatives within the company. We see these sites, the pages on their websites disappearing. We see them actively removing their investment from those campaigns within their organisations. So hopefully, because Xbox has always been really good at this sort of thing, hopefully that they haven't taken a big step back there. I'm concerned now too, Alice. We'll have to look into it.
Xbox's work in that space pushed other companies to do even better than Xbox.
Yeah.
Like arguably PlayStation's accessibility controller is better than Xbox's, but it wouldn't have existed if Xbox hadn't done it first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is also why I'm glad Xbox is sticking around and isn't going into that good night, even if they have lost their way a bit in recent years. You need those challenger brands.
Yeah.
It's instructive to point out that one of the first things that that Asha has done as a CEO is she's released a manifesto called We Are Xbox. She got everybody together in one of these meetings in the big auditorium and basically went and said, this is how we're going to do things from now on. It's very different than what I think has been in the past, and it probably reflects the reason that she was chosen, you know, as a way of breaking with, you know, sort of the past as opposed to evolving from the past. And one of the things she said in this manifesto was that the model that got us here won't be the one that takes us forward. So she's identified quite a lot of problems, I guess, with the way that Microsoft had been changing pricing and gaming plans and just the whole kind of vibe of the commercial experience of it. Has outlined a pretty extensive plan about how she wants to change Xbox into a company that engages with people in a different way. So hopefully a lot of the accessibility issues that, you know, that were emerging over the past few years will continue as part of that. But there is definitely a sense that she's trying to do the commercial model around Xbox in a different way, which hopefully will be as inclusive as what was evolving previously.
She notably did not mention any of the inclusivity initiatives in that manifesto, nor did she get super specific about what any of it means. It definitely was a different tone to the previous thing because she didn't once say, for you, the gamers. But by listing Elder Scrolls as one of the creator-led games alongside Minecraft, just, I don't know. I have some questions about what all of this means and how much it will actually matter. But I'm choosing positivity in this situation because I have no reason to think otherwise yet.
You are listening to Download the Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by Alice Clark, who is a freelance tech and games journalist and the writer of the Press Any Button Substack, and also David Browey, who is a technology journalist at The Information Age. And look, tech can be a little doom and gloom these days, a little bit dystopian. So tell me about some tech that's brought you joy this week. We do love technology here at Download the Show. Tell me about how it's improved your life in any way at all, Alice.
Okay, so full disclosure, Xbox flew me to Japan last week. Ooh. To play Forza Horizon 6.
What a trip. What a thing to be able to say. That is extraordinary.
Like, I did my laundry last week. That's
great. I broke my foot.
Oh, no. Damn.
Anyway, tell me about your being flown to Japan to play Forza story, Alice. Oh, my gosh.
So Forza Horizon, it's my favorite video game series of all time because I love that it's this perfect blend of really serious racing, but then also if you just want to drive off a cliff, you'll get points for that too. The new Horizon 6 game, it comes out next month. It's set in Japan. And I have to admit, because of how into AI Microsoft has been, I've been really nervous that it was going to suck. And I got to play it for a while, and it does not suck. Oh. It's actually really good, and I'm really excited because I've been so nervous that I was going to hate it, and I love it. So that's made me happy.
Best case scenario. And David, what about you? Is there some tech that's brought you joy this week?
Well, mine is also car related, but it's slightly different. Many people out there, and I'm probably dating myself here, but will remember a show called Knight Rider back in the early 80s.
Absolutely.
Yep. With Kit. And I used to run every time it was on and sit down and just enjoy David Hasselhoff and that talking car. So Kit had that sort of red pulsing, you know, light that would go back and forth and back and forth. Now, fast forward to 2026. It is a light strip which goes on the dash. And so it has a mode now where I actually have that pulsing red light going back and forth on the dash, which makes me happy. And on top of that, one of the recent software updates to this car added, if you can believe it, a talking AI chatbot, which, as I mentioned, among other things, taught me how to swear in Greek. You can get it to summarize your news things, or you can talk to it like it's Kit. So I'm literally now living Knight Rider after 45 years.
Hey, are you there?
Hey, yeah, I'm here. What's up?
It's a beautiful morning. I was thinking of going and getting some brunch by the beach. Can you recommend some places for me to get a good breakfast at a cafe, maybe in Mordialloc or so?
Sounds perfect for a beach brunch. Near Mordialloc, check out Hendrix Cafe or Main Street Cafe for solid breakfasts. They're top-rated locals. The Morty Canteen on Beach Road is right by the water, too, about 9 kilometers away. Want me to map one?
Yeah, that'd be great. Hey, I want to get some words to impress my friend that I'm meeting for brunch. He's Greek. Can you teach me some Greek words?
Sure, here's a few Greek gems for brunch to wow your mate. Say Kalimera for good morning, Kaliorexi for enjoy your meal, and Yamas for cheers. Throw in Efaristo Poli for thank you very much. He'll love it.
Thanks a lot.
Parakalo, mate. Have a great brunch.
I believe that's called healing your inner child, David. That's what you're doing through technology right here. That's fantastic.
It just brings a smile to my face.
There you go. David Rowie, thank you so much for joining us on Download This Show. Where can people find you and your work?
So I write regularly for Information Age. I also do podcasting at Cybercrime Magazine, and I've recently joined the great team over at The Energy as well, expanding into the energy transition and doing some interesting work there as well.
Wonderful. And Alice Clark, thank you for joining Download This Show.
Thanks, man.
Where can people find you and your work?
So I freelance for many publications. You can find me most at gadgetguide.com.au and ScreenHub, bitofnews.com.au. You can also follow my Substack, Press Any Button, which I do with Tim Biggs every week, or listen to my podcast, Sapphic AV Club. It has nothing to do with technology, but it's fun.
Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And some more tech news from the week that was. In case you missed it, the Australian government has decided it has had quite enough of watching Meta and TikTok monetize our journalism for free. Draft legislation called the News Bargaining Incentive would require companies like Meta and Google and TikTok to pay for the journalism they aggregate or reshare, or face a 2.25% levy on their Australian revenues. The more deals they strike with local newsrooms, the less they pay. Google says it already has commercial agreements with more than 90 Australian news businesses and has come out swinging, calling the tax unnecessary. Speaking of tax, the Australian Tax Office is shopping around for a biometric upgrade to its national digital identity system, MyID. The ATO is specifically looking to address advancements in liveness. The goal is to make sure the person proving their identity is a living human and not a convincing video of one, which in 2026 is a much harder problem than it sounds and arguably the most important tech procurement tender in the country right now. Globally, the numbers on tech job losses are becoming genuinely difficult to look at. As of April 29, there have been 155 layoff events impacting over 100,000 workers, averaging about 840 job losses per day, with the largest single event being Oracle's 30,000 cuts. The uncomfortable subtext here, noted by OpenAI CEO Sam Altman himself, is that some companies are using AI as a scapegoat for layoffs that they would have conducted anyway, meaning the actual human cost of genuine AI displacement is being muddied by opportunistic restructuring dressed up in algorithmic clothing. And that's all for this week on Download This Show. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. We have had a little debate raging in our inbox, downloadthisshow@abc.net.au. We did have a suggestion last week that maybe we could switch up the theme song. And now I've got an email here from Evelyn who says, I look forward to hearing it every Friday. Please don't change it. Thank you. Regards, Evelyn. Oh, Evelyn, it is compelling. Do you feel any differently? Shoot me an email, downloadtheshow@abc.net.au, or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram at Ray Johnston.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.